We might say the meanest things. Sometimes we're not much company. There's no rearranging. Our writing remains the same. We remain the same. And as far as we're concerned, you belong to us.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of the Pop Dose podcast. I'm Dave Lifton, and this is something new that we're trying over at popdose.com. We've been talking about having a podcast for over a year now, but various delays, admittedly entirely on my part, have kept it from happening until now. This is going to be a monthly show taking on various topics of interest in pop culture, and with me for this premiere episode today are my co-hosts, Pop Dose Editor-in-Chief Jeff Giles and Managing Editor Jason Hare. Gentlemen?
What's up, fuckers? Hey, guys.
I think it was
going on?
I think it was a race to see who was going to get the first sup fuckers in there.
I'm honored to get the first one.
I actually wrote in my notes sup fuckers, but I said, all right, I'll let you guys have that instead.
Jeff got to it first. I would just like to say that I don't appreciate you guys scheduling this too early in the day for me to be drunk.
It's 10 a.m. You're usually like 2 hours in at this point. You get up at 4 in the morning.
Not on Saturday, I don't.
What time do you get up on Saturdays?
I sleep in until 6.
6?
Whenever my goddamn kids let me sleep until.
But you brush your teeth with bourbon, don't you?
I haven't started doing that yet, but it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. For you.
Well, you know, the brand that I get is, you know, I'm trying to read the label from across the room right now. It's like 51% alcohol or something. I bet that would get rid of everything on my
team. I'm trying to read the label from, quote, across the room. And when I say across the room, I mean in my hand.
It's the double vision.
Shit, we're out of funny already. Yeah. God damn it.
Good night, everybody. Okay, so as the three of us are always going to be here, but as the show goes on, we're going to be bringing in more members of the Pop Dose staff. And while we were kicking around ideas for what we wanted the podcast to be in terms of format and length and things like that, Jeff wrote something that I think has served as kind of a guiding light for what we want to achieve here. And speaking of which, let's pour one out for the guiding light, which has gone off the air after.
That's right. Yesterday was the last episode, yeah. Wasn't it?
Was yesterday the last episode?
Yeah. I thought you would have like been lighting candles or holding a vigil or something.
Yeah. Well, I never got on the show, but the casting director for Guiding Light is a very, very smart man and has written a really great book about auditioning for TV and film that I've used a lot. But it speaks to, you know, there's now two soap operas left pretty much in New York. And I'm wondering how long those are going to last and how long soap operas are going to last in general. I don't know what Jeff is going to watch during the day.
That's right. When I'm eating my my bonbons.
What are you going to do without your stories?
That's right. I forgot. That's what they used to be
That's
called.
That's right. That's what your grandmother would call them.
Well, my wife's grandmother actually was a lifelong Guiding Light devotee, and she passed away this year. And I think she called them her stories.
Yeah.
That show was on for something like, I think, 72
something
years.
Like that, yeah.
So I think she may have actually listened to it on the radio before it was on television.
Huh.
It's kind of we should all be wearing black, I guess, right? Especially Jason.
Because your grandmother died? Or because...
Because Guiding Light died.
Oh, okay.
I'm always wearing black anyway because it makes me look slimmer.
Especially on the podcast.
I'm not wearing anything right now.
Ooh.
Just FYI.
I believe that.
Everyone's like, thank God this is not a video podcast.
Well, the last time I tried to have breakfast at your house, you were wearing...
That is not conversation for a podcast, Jeff. And that never happened.
It totally did. I was sitting at the breakfast table minding my own business, and all of a sudden Jason's ass is in my face.
I was across the room, for the record.
And by across the room...
Right. Bringing it all back. Nice work. Oh, too much information. Well,
what are we going to talk about
today,
Dave?
Wait a sec. I still never got to say what it is that you had said.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Oh.
I'm glad to do it because I don't remember what I wrote.
I never read it in the first place.
What Jeff said was, I avoid most podcasts in general, but if Adam Carolla's stupid podcast can keep people entertained for an hour, so can ours. So that's our philosophy, and we're sticking to it. And we're going to and we're going to kick things off with Jeff.
Come on. Jeff Jazzy, yo. Jeff Jazzy, yo.
All right. We're going to talk about the story that came out a couple of days ago about ASCAP and BMI, performance. Shit, what are we going to call these guys?
Guilds, the associations?
That's going to... Yeah, I guess guilds, songwriting guilds, I suppose, if that makes it makes sense to people who don't collect royalties from music. But basically, these guys collect what are called mechanical royalties from performances of songs on the radio. So if you wrote a song and it gets played on the radio, then you get a couple of cents, and it's collected by ASCAP or BMI, or there are a couple other performance rights organizations. And these guys, ASCAP and BMI, are the two biggest ones, and they announced this week that they want iTunes and other online music stores to pay royalties on the 30-second samples that they use to advertise the product that ASCAP and BMI are indirectly selling. So that's big news this week. It may not seem like it matters much to people who don't collect money from these royalties, but it could have a real profound impact on the way these the stores operate, if ASCAP and BMI get their way. And also Popdose has experienced it directly, because I think 2 weeks ago we got an email from a representative at ASCAP trying to kind of strong-arm us into signing an agreement where we would pay for the music that we're hosting.
Huh. Well, there's a difference here, right? There's a difference between...
Sure, there's a big difference. Like, iTunes is selling stuff and we're not, but...
Right, and it's... Well, but there's also two different issues. The issue is whether, they want money for the files that we're giving away or the 30-second samples. I think it's the 30-second samples that's kind of ridiculous.
Well, yeah, and they've been looking for new revenue streams a lot over the last few years. You know, as people buy fewer and fewer albums, they're trying to shore up their revenue by sort of inventing new ways of getting money out of anybody that has anything to do with music. I mean, everybody's heard about... the Girl Scouts getting shaken down for singing Happy Birthday.
They deserve to. Those freeloaders deserve to get shrunk. Shook down.
Bars and bookstores and any place where live music is performed, that's gotten a lot harder in the last 10, 15 years or so. So this is just an extension of that.
They're looking for new revenue streams. Why bother working this out? Why don't they just sue us? That seems like they would.
I don't know why.
I don't know. Just sue iTunes. Just go straight to the lawsuit.
But the thing is, though, that iTunes is advertising the music that these guys are selling, and to a far, far lesser extent, we are too. And by cracking down on people who do that, they are going to reduce the revenue stream that they're trying to access anyway.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. They don't seem to realize that people get interested in music by hearing music, whether it be a 30-second sample or a full song. I mean, I can't tell you how many albums I've bought because when you had your old blog, Jeff, when you used to post, songs on there, you hear one or two songs, and that's, you hear one or two songs and okay, this is probably going to be, hopefully this is going to be a solid album, or at least I can go and now buy those individual songs. Or I can listen to other samples and decide if they're my kind of thing.
I think they do realize.
Well, what's funny is,
one second, I think they do realize that, that these things, previews and stuff, do help sales of songs. I just don't think they care.
That they help the sales. I just don't see how you. I don't see the reasoning for collecting money on a 30-second sample, because it's not like anyone's going to go record that 30-second sample and be like, well, now I've got the song.
Right.
I don't think the industry's left hand knows what its right hand is doing, because we get serviced with pitches and tracks, and they run the continuum from the label kind of turning a blind eye to whatever you do with the material. I mean, they know who we are. They know what we're going to do with it. To the other end, which is, you know, please post this on your site. And then you've got, you know, lawsuits like this or, you know, guys like Doug Morris who want to squeeze every spare penny out of any web-based music business model that there is. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's a clear consensus about what these guys want out of the internet, what they want out of the future of music. I think it's I would liken this whole philosophy that the industry seems to have to you know, watching it all unfold is kind of like watching your abusive stepfather throw himself down the stairs again and again and again.
Wow,
because that's what they're doing to themselves.
You just brought this into a bleak area.
That's pretty descriptive. I don't know what you watched growing up. I feel.
Yeah. Anything you want to talk about, Jeff? Any problems? You should be going to the therapy cast or something.
Well, you know, the industry is abusive. They've always abused their customers. They've always abused the artists, and it's just now that they don't have quite as tight of a grip. You know, they can't force people to buy the whole Sugar Ray album based on one single
anymore.
Nor should they.
Anymore. Right. Exactly. Nor should they ever have. Exactly. Right.
Well, you have to distinguish, I think, you know, you're talking about like ASCAP and BMI who allegedly represent the artist. And then, you know, you talk about like Doug Morris. Doug Morris is head of Universal, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Doug Morris who is represents a corporate behemoth. And they're always going to be at loggerheads anyway. You know, so to say that they don't understand what they're doing is, or, you know, they're not in cahoots or whatever. You know, you're talking about two entirely different entities. But, you know, that are both fighting for the same piece of a shrinking pie. There's so much less money that's out there now than there was 10 years ago. And everybody's, you know, like fighting like Michael Vick's dogs for it.
Nice. Jeff's mom has a shrinking pie.
One of her many talents.
And it only took 16 and a half minutes to get to the first mother joke. It only took 16 and a half minutes to get to Jeff's mom.
I can't believe it took that long. I feel a little ashamed.
She delivers. Faster than Domino's.
If she's not there in 16 and a half minutes or less,
then the pie is free.
Your shrinking pie is free. So what's going to happen with this, Jeff? Do you have to respond to... Did you get an email or did you get a letter?
No, I got an email, and it's funny because... I'm not going to say his name. Jason knows him. Popdos has kind of a behind-the-scenes sort of, not really an investor, but kind of a guardian angel who has whose function is kind of an advisor to us since the site was still in the planning stages. And
his name is Doug Morris, actually.
I got the email, and I thought for a few minutes about how I wanted to respond, and I wrote back to the guy and I said, it's tiered. You know, the fee structures that they want are tiered, and I'm pretty sure that we would be near the bottom of the tier, you know, near the bottom rung. What they want up front is a minimum of $300-something a year, but on top of that, what they want is they want to know who is coming to your site, how many times they're coming to your site, how long they're staying, and what they're downloading, and that represents like an utter bookkeeping nightmare to a site like ours that has no operating budget. I mean, the $340, I guess maybe we could scrounge up with advertising revenue, even though advertising revenue is almost non-existent right now. But it's the other stuff that would break our backs. And so I wrote to the guy and I said, you know, I understand what you're trying to do, but you know, the revenue that you're looking for is not here. It isn't in sites like this one. And I would sooner tell all my writers not to write about ASCAP artists than agree to this stupid deal. And then I forwarded it to the advisor that I mentioned. And of course he told me I shouldn't have responded at all. But his advice was just to kind of wait it out, you know, let it either blow up somewhere else, you know, see what kind of impact it has on other sites, or wait for it to just go away. I mean, Either way, there isn't a whole lot we can do. I think that posting songs is going to become something that sites like ours do less and less often, because you know, the options for hearing music online are so widespread now. I mean, anytime an artist comes out with an album, they're pretty much going to stream music, or they're going to give music away, or it's going to be on MySpace, or it's going to be on Facebook, or you can see the video on YouTube.
Right, so we don't have to be the conduit to get the music exactly to them.
Yeah, I mean, we can be the conduit to point people in the direction to hear it, but we don't need to...
give it to them.
Exactly. Right. So it may be... I don't know. I'm really curious to see what kind of impact...
I'll tell you honestly, I'm this is just my personal thing. I'm downloading less music these days from blogs and things like that, especially because Popdos has the website set up where you don't have to download the song to hear it. You can just stream it. And because of that, I spend more time just doing that. And then if I listen to a song and I decide that it's something that I really like, that I'm going to want to listen to, you know, again, that's when I'll actually download it. Whereas in the past, you know, on your previous site and on my previous site, you know, you'd have to download the song if you wanted to hear it.
And you know, it's funny, what I've noticed is I've been the last couple of weeks I've been writing a lot more reviews, and I haven't been posting MP3s to any of them. I reviewed the new Radney Foster, the new Bruce Hornsby, and the debut from this I may be saying it wrong, I don't care, Kid Cudi, and I didn't post MP3s to any of them, but they've all gotten, I watched the stats and they've all gotten a lot of views. So you know, it used to be that I thought that posting MP3s was the only way we could attract people to the posts, because they would pop up at the Hype Machine and people would come over that way.
That, by the way, was how I found both of your old sites. Through Hype Machine, yeah.
Hmm.
So it'd be like, hey, here's something really old and cheesy. Let me go there.
Right. Well, I'm actually kind of bummed that there's no, like, I mean, I read those reviews, but at the same time, you know, I wouldn't have minded an MP3.
Sure, of course not. But the Hornsby and the Foster, those are actually pretty good examples, because both of them had electronic press kits that were on YouTube.
Oh, we're right.
So I just made those part of the post, and it was probably a little more, you know, better representative of the album than if I had, you know, just linked to one or two of my favorite tracks.
But did you, as a result of in checking these stats on these posts, did you wound up seeing that the click-throughs to Amazon were... improved at all?
I should look at that. I don't check my Amazon.
Yeah, neither do I.
Stats as often as I ought to.
I, for my Chart Attack posts, I still put an Amazon and iTunes link next to every song that I do. I don't know why I do.
I don't know why you put the iTunes links in there. You're crazy.
Because every once in a while I get a check for $1.50. I don't know why. I guess it's because when I first started my website, and I linked up with Hype Machine, and I looked at their rules of the kind of sites that they support, and it was technically in their rules, it said you're supposed to offer links where people can purchase the music. And so I guess it's...
Sure, I don't know why you put the iTunes links in there, because those guys are assholes.
I guess, I don't know, it's a good question. I guess because at the time, it was either you could buy the whole album on Amazon, or you could... If you just wanted that one song, there was no option on Amazon to do that.
Right.
So that's why I did iTunes. I guess I'm just in a habit with it. And I really like getting a check for like $1.50.
All right, now the main reason why the launch of this podcast was delayed was because I moved from Washington, D.C. to Chicago, and I needed to take some time to get my life organized before, you know, undertaking any new projects and stuff.
You also had to write a book about Barack Obama.
And one about Michael Jackson.
Yeah. So don't, you know, buy his book, everybody. Buy his books, everybody.
You can find the link to it at my own blog at wingsforwheels.net.
Buy him. I didn't. Sorry.
Over the past 10 months, because of all these changes, I found myself with like a very different lifestyle than I had before, so I can't say if it's happening everywhere or if it's specific to Chicago, but I've just noticed that these like 20-something hipsters are just too ironically obsessed with 80s nostalgia. And like I was on the L the other day, and some kid was wearing a Donkey Kong t-shirt, You know, as if he was old enough, you know, to have blown all of his allowance money on it back in the day, you know, like I did. And I hate sounding like a more of a cranky old guy than I already am. But, you know, like you go to a bar and all of a sudden you'll hear like Take Me Home Tonight or Your Love by the Outfield and everybody's singing along like it's, you know, fucking Stairway to Heaven or something.
What kind of bars are you going to that they're playing the Outfield?
And Eddie Money.
Yeah. They're just like your average everyday neighborhood bar here. Where, like, you know, like if you head down, like, in Lakeview and stuff, you'll see a lot of bars like that.
Yeah, I guess I've always been against that, but at the same time, I think some of those people who have the, you know, the hipster irony are the people that are coming to my Acoustic 80 shows. So
I was going to say, you rely on those people.
Yeah, some of those people. although, to be honest, most of our audience is in there. You know, it's funny, because when I market Acoustic 80s, I say, you know, obviously this is 80s music, so it appeals to people in their late 20s and then anyone in their 30s to up to their, you know, their mid 40s. But I guess I could be saying that you can market it to younger people as well. But it's funny because there's a, I know, Dave, you asked me if I own any t-shirts that aren't hipster ironic or whatever, but I only wear shirts that are of things that I had genuine affection for when I was a kid.
Right, and that's my point. Can you genuinely, ironically like something that you weren't old enough to hate the first time around?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Your Love and Take Me Home Tonight, they're perfectly average, decent pop songs that were hits and indicative of the time, but, you know, if you were 3 years old in 1988 or 87 or whatever, you don't remember it. So how can you claim it for something that's not? This isn't like when, you know, I'm sure all of us went through like our classic rock phases and absorbed the music and the history of the 60s. All right, if we were wearing if we were proclaiming the genius of Gary Lewis and the Playboys over the Beatles, you know, that's what this right. is the equivalent of. I just don't think the Teen Wolf was such an important cultural milestone that it needs to be celebrated. You know, I mean, is this just the effect of VH1's I Love the 80s and the unfortunate, overwhelming influence of Chuck Klosterman on society right now?
I like Teen Wolf.
You know, the Teen Wolf is going to be a show.
This is really? Exactly what I'm fucking talking about.
I know. It's perfect. MTV is making a Teen Wolf show. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is everybody's out of ideas. I mean, so that's why
but
companies
go
back
ideas.
And they...
Take the good ideas from the 80s. I mean, you got the whole steady Lovin' Springsteen, right? That's genuine love.
But who's to say what was good from the, you know?
Me!
I mean, I'm not...
Have you not been paying attention?
Good night, everybody. That's where you play the bumper again. That's where you play the Dave Lifton bumper again. I don't know. Like, for example, when I was a kid, I still am a huge Michael J. Fox fan. So if Teen Wolf comes on, I won't turn it off. I probably won't seek it out. Like, I won't be like, I really want to watch Teen Wolf today. I don't own the DVD, I swear.
Yet.
Although I'm sure Jeff is ordering it for me right now.
And you're not wearing a fake faded distressed iron-on t-shirt with Teen Wolf on it.
But I might, because I liked Teen Wolf back then.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But like, for example, I try to wear 80s tees for my acoustic 80s gigs, but I won't wear like a Super Mario t-shirt, for example, or a Legend of Zelda t-shirt, because I wasn't into those things when I was a kid.
Right.
So I'm only wearing things like my Lionel Richie All Night Long shirt. I'm only wearing things that I can legitimately back up.
And we should also point out that Jason's avatar on Twitter is his own face in the cover of which Lionel Richie?
Can't Slow Down.
Can't Slow Down.
Can't Slow Down. Yeah. Which isn't that also the name of the new Foreigner album?
Yes, it is.
Why is that not a direct cover album of Lionel Richie's album?
Wouldn't that be great if Foreigner did Lionel
awesome.
Richie covers?
Well, I mean, in theory, it would be awesome. In reality, it would still be Foreigner, so it's hard to say.
How about Lionel Richie doing Foreigner covers?
Now, that would be awesome.
That might be slightly less
no,
awesome.
No, I disagree. That would be 100% more awesome. I had a dream, either last night or the night before, that I missed the on sale.
It was an awesome dream.
I had a dream that I missed the on sale date for Lionel Richie concert tickets. I swear to you, I'm just remembering this right now.
Did you wake up in tears?
I woke up upset that I did not get the tickets on time. When Lionel Richie tours, I will be there multiple times.
I'm going to see what I can do to get an interview set up for you.
There's no way you're going to be able to get me an interview.
I'll do the same thing I did when I was trying to get the Richard Marx interview.
What, write to Lionel Richie and tell him that Jay Stash said that he could sniff his taint?
Yeah.
Why don't you explain that?
On Twitter, I should actually tell the Jay Stash people this, but there's this cartoon, speaking of hipster irony, a John Oates-inspired cartoon web series is coming out called Jay Stash, in which John Oates' mustache, which he shaved off in the early 90s, becomes kind of it sort of becomes a crime-fighting superhero. He and Oates reunite, and it looks like Oates can use the mustache as a boomerang or a lightning bolt to strike down evildoers.
French tickler.
Yeah, French tickler. And Jay Stash has his own website and Twitter feed, and for obvious reasons, Jay Stash is my Twitter friend and Jason's also. I don't know. Do you follow him, Dave? Is he?
No, this is kind of apart from the
you were not aware
post
of this?
On Addicted to Vinyl. This was the first I had heard of it.
Right. So I don't know how this conversation started, but the three of us were kind of talking to the mustache. And I said that I thought Richard Marx should make a cartoon called Our Mullet. You know, that was kind of the same thing as Jay Stash, except he'd use his mullet to fight crime. And the mustache said, Jay Stash said, Richard Marx can, what did he say, sniff my taint? Yeah. So I contacted Richard Marx's publicist for a comment, letting the publicist know that John Oates' mustache had said that Richard Marx could sniff his taint, and kind of urged her not to allow John Oates' facial hair to insult an artist of Richard Marx's integrity. And Jason was kind of sad about all that because he'd been hoping to interview Richard Marx at some point.
I was like, we haven't been able to, I genuinely wanted to interview Richard Marx because as I've said, I think we've said probably on one of these podcasts, that we've collaborated on before, that I do genuinely love Richard Marx. Was he one of my guilty pleasures?
Yeah.
He was, right?
I think he was, yeah.
I should point out that to those of you who are following this, who are getting this, I used to do a podcast on my own site, and the genesis for this podcast started when Jason and Jeff were guests of mine a year and a half ago, and we did two episodes. We talked about guilty pleasures on one episode, and we did an episode of Chart Attack, where we took the top 10 chart for a given week. Continue.
So I really like Richard Marx, and I was hoping that eventually, we could work out an interview with him. And then Jeff just cold calls the publicist and opens it with Richard Marx can sniff my taint.
I didn't open it with that. I let her know.
Okay, I'm sorry. You said, hi, I'm from Poptos, a pop culture website. Can you respond to this comment of Richard Marx can sniff my taint?
I thought Richard Marx deserved a chance to respond to that slander.
But you didn't give the whole backstory about how it was inspired by Richard Marx's mullet.
No, of course not,
You instigate it.
He does. You know what, maybe we should go the other direction. Was I suggested that Paula Cole have her own cartoon series called Armpit.
Yeah, I don't think Paula Cole has a publicist, though, so it may not, Unless you could get the number for the gas station around the corner from where she works.
All I know is my shot at interviewing Richard Marx is now ruined.
You're being dramatic. I don't think that's true. Richard Marx is supposed to have a wonderful sense of humor.
Well, you let me know when you hear back from Richard Marx's publicist about...
Well, I told you, my plan is to get everyone I know to write to the publicist so she thinks that there's really this big controversy about Jay Stash insulting Richard Marx, and then hopefully we can get him to do one of his... I guess he does video blogs. This is what...
He does.
Yeah, so...
Vlogs.
Vlog. I hate that word. I'm not saying it.
Vlog. You just did.
God damn it.
Just FYI. I don't know. What were we talking about? Hipster irony.
Yes.
Sorry. And why doesn't anybody ironically love Richard Marx? Why is that? Is that just, is that waiting to happen?
Too soon, man. Too soon.
It might be too soon.
Every time I'm down on Rush Street, I think of him.
Are we in, are we in an early, are we in an early 80s hipster ironic? I mean, if you want to look back, you can think about, you know, Yacht Rock and, you know, what that has, or even the love of Michael McDonald, which I think is a lot of people not genuinely like myself. You know, I genuinely love Michael McDonald, or I should be specific. I genuinely love What a Fool Believes, but you know, like the whole, what do you think about the whole Grizzly Bear using Michael McDonald on their, to sing lead vocals on their, on the B side of their single? Do you guys know about that at all? Or?
Oh, you know that I know about it. I sent it to you.
Right.
Yeah, and I posted on Twitter that I thought Williamsburg exploded in an irony mishap and landed at your doorstep in Astoria.
Right. That's right. That's right. So, what do you guys think of that? Are you for that kind? What do you think of that kind of collaboration?
Well, look, McD is a great singer. I mean, and he still has a great voice. And I didn't hear I didn't hear the song. And if his voice suits the song, then it's fine.
I told Jason I appreciate, like, I love McDonald's voice, but my problem with his stuff is that it's often very poorly produced, and he does not always write the best songs. So it was nice to hear his voice out of the ordinary context, but you know, so I didn't have as much of a problem with it as Jason did. But, you know, that being said, it really is not that great of a song.
I felt like he was just being used for the wrong, like, I don't know. I don't know.
You make it seem like he's brain damaged, and they just, like, handed him a bus pass and he went up in the studio not knowing what he was doing.
Well, no. I think they both know exactly what they're doing. This is not entirely fair of me to say, because I really don't know much about Grizzly Bear, but I feel like they know that there's a current popular wave of Michael McDonald going on, you know, from Yacht Rock and from, you know, he had a little appearance on 30 Rock and things like that. And he knows that he can get in touch with a younger audience, and he's been kind of playing into it as well.
So here's my question for you. Which is worse, this Grizzly Bear thing or him doing that, what was it, a commercial for MCI that he did?
Yeah, a while ago.
Taking it to the streets.
Wow. So, was it taking it to the... No. It was... He was promoting his Motown. Yeah.
Right. So which is worse?
The Grizzly Bear.
Wow. All right.
I'm fine with the MCI. That helped him... That definitely helped him sell his record, right? He wouldn't have... There's no way that Motown record would have sold the way it sold without that commercial. So didn't James Taylor do something similar?
Oh, fuck James Taylor.
All right. Fair enough. I can't argue that point.
You know, the Motown record, the first Motown record, wasn't bad. But have you listened to the James Taylor covers album?
It's on my iPod, and I've never listened to it. Never listened to it all the way through. I've listened. It's pretty bad, right?
It's brutal. Yeah.
I think I listened to the Leonard Cohen cover that he did, and maybe one or two other songs. But it was incredibly bland.
So, yeah, and you know, to get back to what we started talking about a few minutes ago, I don't know if it's early 80s or late 80s or what. I just think it's kind of selective, because there's no James Taylor renaissance, you know, and then there's no Air Supply resurgence. There's no, you know, nobody gives a shit about Christopher Cross. So
right. It's VH1's I Love the 80s references, and whatever Chuck Klosterman puts in his columns, whatever reference he makes.
Man, you sure do hate Chuck Klosterman.
That gets picked up by these guys wearing, you know, Tom Waits fedoras in 2009.
Well, I don't know. He's done a lot about Billy Joel, hasn't
he?
Hasn't Chuck? You know, and I don't think Billy Joel is enjoying any. Is it different if you're still out there and you're still kind of a viable artist? I mean, Billy Joel is still out there making money at what it is that he does.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I was listening to the stream of Jason Lytle concert on NPR's podcast concert series, and he did like this cheesy synthesizer off-key instrumental version of Just the Way You Are, and I was just like, shut the hell up. You know, because that was completely done as irony. It was just like, you know, moving the pitch writer wheel back and forth to get the melody right.
That irritates me. People who genuinely love I was watching that The Live from Daryl's House video series, the Daryl Hall video series, where artists come to his house and they pretty much spend, you know, 20 minutes talking about how beautiful his property is in Connecticut, and then they do some songs. And they had he had Chromeo on, the synth pop, I don't know what you call them, I guess synth pop group, the duo.
Kind of like
and they
R&B.
Do a, what'd you say?
They're kind of R&B, maybe.
Okay.
A little bit of late 80s R&B in there.
Well, they have, like, you know, the Zap, Troutman, right. Roger Troutman type sound to them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not the vocoder. The talk box. It's the talk box. Okay. With the
keyboard.
They're very similar. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And they did an awesome cover of Family Man. And I thought that was, you know, I felt like they weren't doing it to be hipster ironic. It seemed to me, the vibe seemed to me like it was more genuine. Although I guess you can't go to Daryl Hall's house and be hipster ironic. Because he'll throw you right off his multi-million-dollar property.
Right.
So
you have to, in order to get invited there, you have to show some genuine love of the material.
Yes. Well, I think you have to stroke Daryl Hall's ego.
At least.
It's an interesting. At least. It's an interesting series to watch. Now we're totally getting off topic, but it's an interesting series to watch. Because he's got a really good setup. In his studio. I mean, the music sounds great. The band sounds fantastic. But they spend a lot of time, like, the caterer showing, the chef showing the food that he's made for the guests.
Are you fucking kidding?
I'm not. Watch an episode. You'll see this.
I don't want to watch an episode. I've had enough of Daryl Hall. I'm excited for John Oates, but the live from Daryl's house does not appeal to me at all.
I think it's the episode with Smokey Robinson on it. There's a whole, like, 2-minute segment with the chef showing, oh, and I made this, and this is this, and they sit on the back porch, and Daryl's talking about his property and everything like that. And it's like, you know, I appreciate the music, but I don't think any of us need to be reminded of how much money you've made.
Except for maybe Daryl does.
Is this episode with Smokey Robinson subtitled Plastic Surgery Disasters? Because between the two of them, they've got something else that they can talk about besides Daryl's property.
You think Daryl's had plastic surgery?
Oh yeah.
He's so fucking puffy. I just think that's hard living. I think he made a few bad moves.
That's got to be the name of his next album, Daryl Hall. Hard living.
Hard living. Yeah. Well, Smokey's scary looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's a great clip on YouTube of Smokey and George Michael singing Careless Whisper from it was from that Apollo, Live at the Apollo anniversary show or something.
Right on the list of things I will never watch.
It's like 84 or 85 maybe. And Smokey comes out to sing Careless Whisper with him. And he's got like this really sketchy looking pencil thin mustache and a soul glow haircut. Awesome. That's going in the show notes. If any of this makes it in.
You know, we should. You should put it in there, and I want to see if we get an ad added to our rotation for the Smokey Robinson Frozen Jambalaya. You're tuning in to Jason
Hare. Man, I love that intro.
I do too.
That is awesome. We should give credit to our sound designer Teria, who has done all of our bumpers and what do you call them, bumpers and stingers.
He did the intro
stingers
theme.
and I don't know whatever else they're called. They're all from Teria, who you guys may remember from his Into the Ear of Madness, the Songs of David Foster.
And I think
series.
That these show exactly what the effects of listening to nothing but David Foster music for a year have on the musical
That's
sensibilities.
Totally true.
We have to give Teria all the credit in the world, because I think it was less than 24 hours, I think, that he put all this together. It was in the space of
and
like
we have
an
so
afternoon.
Many more, and he's always like, oh, we can send you more stuff.
Yeah. Right. He's just so good. And he's such a genius with you know, the keyboard and with the sound. I love it so. You're tuning in to Jason Hare. Get alive. Love it. It's totally true. It's funny and true. So anyway, what I was going to talk about was how on Oprah yesterday, Not that I watched Oprah yesterday. I did. I will cop to watching. I did watch. I can't believe I'm going to admit this. I watched the Whitney Houston interviews on Oprah. As in, I specifically taped them and watched them.
You had to tape them because they're on at the same time as Judge Judy, right?
I had to watch it. I couldn't help it. Which I thought that those interviews were really interesting too. But in any case, so Mariah Carey is now, she was on Oprah's show yesterday, her live show in Central Park.
Were you there?
At the show? No, but actually the day that Whitney Houston was performing in Central Park, I was biking through the park and the line was like almost all around the entire park of people trying to get in. And then apparently Whitney really stunk it up. So I feel bad for all those people who got online, you know, 4 a.m. or something like that, you know, and we're like, oh my God, she can't even sing anymore. And so what we're talking about with Mariah Carey is that her next single, I guess it's her next single,
yeah,
is she covers I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner.
Yeah. Which,
Which I'm not sure if this qualifies for the hipster irony that we were talking about, because I don't know if Foreigner has yet reached that hipster ironic point.
No, I don't think. I also don't think that Whitney's audience, or Mariah's audience, understands irony.
That's a good point. This is more about nostalgia. This is more about using Mariah, or Mariah using her current persona, or whatever, to evoke a feeling.
What from, is her current from, persona? I think of her as just a batshit insane, incredibly rich woman.
Well, I don't think of her in, when I say her current persona. I could actually talk a lot about this because I've talked about this a lot on Chart Attack, me kind of mourning what's happened to Mariah Carey, which is that she has managed to stay culturally relevant and musically relevant over all these years by shifting herself to whatever the current trend is. So moving to more of a hip-hop rap flavoring, whereas when she started out, she was more pop, soul R&B pop, and she's really not in that direction anymore. And so she's managed to salvage and maintain a career for herself, even through that huge meltdown that she had, you know, back when she did Glitter and all that kind of crap. She's managed to maintain a career for herself and stay financially viable and culturally viable and all those things, in ways that people like Janet Jackson have not been able to do. Or you could put it to any of those artists who are popular in the late 80s, early 90s, Taylor Dane. There's got to be someone else that I'm just not thinking of at the moment. I should read what I wrote about it. But in exchange for that, she's completely sold her soul, and she's lost what made her great in the first place, which was her singing talent. I don't think she can sing anymore. Her cover here is really not great, and she's awash in backing vocals and things to kind of mask. You know, she used to be able to hit a note purely. She could do the melisma, you know, all over the place type thing when she wanted to, but it wasn't her only trick. And now it's her only trick, and I think it's to mask that she can't hold a note.
How pissed off you were when she performed at the memorial.
Oh, yeah, at the Michael Jackson memorial. I was really angry by that because I thought her cover of her original cover of I'll Be There back in like 91 or 92 on the MTV Unplugged special was really good.
There was a time when you would have said that it would have been a natural thing for Mariah Carey to do a cover of I Want to Know What Love Is. It's got that gospel thing, right, and it would have been great.
Have you guys noticed the ad campaign for this record, what she's been doing, going back and recreating earlier photos of herself? Have you seen this?
No, but I'm noticing that in this clip of her on Oprah, It almost looks like old Mariah Carey. She's got like, you know, she's got her old haircut and she's got kind of her old outfit on, and her breasts aren't out to her chin, you know. But tell me about this.
You know, I forget what the ad was for. I think it might have been for a gig. I don't think it was for the album specifically, but it was a picture of her in the dress that she wore on the cover of her first album. And I think we're all looking at this picture of her singing with the choir in Central Park, and her hair looks the way it did back then. It kind of goes back to what you were saying about her trying to stay relevant by trend-jacking, and especially by showing us her titties. and it seems like she's going 180 right now with this, trying to get back to the
more MOR roots.
Yeah, well, the yeah, exactly. The jeans and the black. What is she wearing there? A bodysuit or something? You know, more demure and classier.
Well, clearly somebody is telling her that something about her image. They need to try a different tack or something.
Well, it's funny. Like you said, this is her new single. This is the third single from this record, which has not been released yet. I think it's the third single, and you did not know that, which I think tells you everything you need to know about what people are probably telling her.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Actually, I don't know any of the singles off this album. The last song I really remember by her was Touch My Body, which I thought was a great song.
Yeah, but same here.
Great video with Jack McBrayer, too.
Yeah, good video, good song, but it didn't need to be Mariah Carey. It could have been anybody doing it. And that's the thing. It's like when you hear Vision of Love, there's only one person who should be singing that song. You know, even her other, some of her other pop songs, Emotions and Someday and stuff like that.
Can we say that Emotions was actually her first cover rather than I'll Be There? Because that was such a ripoff of Best of My Love. I don't know how that got thrown out of court.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Okay, go on.
Because the courts were, the court was preoccupied with the Michael Bolton Isley Brothers lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, thank God he got that one went in favor of the Isley Brothers.
This is pretty much all off topic, but I have my thought is that Mariah Carey was the last person to release a Christmas song that became like a classic radio staple.
Uh-huh. I think you might be right. You're talking about All I Want for Christmas Is You, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the songs that are played on the radio every year at Christmas, the ones that you will always hear, and I can't think of anything more recent than that. I would love to hear in the comments if anybody's got a better example, and maybe this is something we can talk about, you know, more in at Christmas time. It's kind of early for this shit, but yeah. Although Jeff and I are already planning our Melomus.
We'll be talking about plenty of things near Christmas time.
But off topic, but I feel like All I Want for Christmas Is You is the last current Christmas song. You know, people can continue to release their albums, but they're not making their way into the public canon. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
yeah, but when you think about it, like from the 80s, how many were there? Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses, 2000 Miles by the Pretenders.
Well, don't get Jason started on his favorite Christmas song of the 80s,
which is,
I don't know, I have a bunch. Which one are you thinking of?
Oh, I'm thinking of Wham.
Oh, I do love Last Christmas. But I also love Christmas in Hollis, and all, but you know, Bon Jovi's cover of
Stop.
Yeah,
go no further.
Oh, please come home. Let's save this. We'll stop here.
No, but we're talking about brand new Christmas songs, not remakes of existing Christmas songs.
Well, wait a minute. All I Want for Christmas Is You was a cover, wasn't it?
No,
I don't know.
Yes, it was.
Maybe you've just heard it so many times. Do you think it's a cover?
I'm pretty sure it's a cover.
Are you Googling it?
I sure am. Oh, I guess it is. I guess it is a new song. My bad. I thought it was a. For some reason, I thought it was a. It sounds like a cover.
Yeah, she wrote it. Yeah, because it sounds like the Phil Spector Christmas album.
Yes, but the thing is about Mariah Carey, about, you know, I Want to Know What Love is whether this is going to be successful or not. And if it's going to be successful based on the fact that it's Mariah Carey, or it's going to be successful based on the fact that people have some nostalgia for Foreigner.
I would like to hear Foreigner do a cover of Vision of Love. And then I think on the B-side, they should have Michael McDonald do the lead vocals.
Great idea. By the way, in the show notes, just see if you go to the Idolator clip, the Idolator webpage that has the clip of Mariah singing I Want to Know What Love Is. We'll have that in the show notes. The Frozen video, before you press play, it looks like Oprah is holding a giant gold dildo.
Which we have christened Steadman, right?
That's right.
Steadyman?
The Steady Man, yeah.
The Steady Man, nice.
I guess it's only fair to mention that Foreigner is, in fact, coming out with a new record.
Yes, one of our friends, Kurt, has said really great things about it. Let me, I just saw he just had a post on Facebook about it. New Foreigner album, Smokes. Best melodic rock
disc. Oh, it Smokes, all right.
Eons. Welcome back, boys.
I think that Matt Wardlaw, of our buddy Addicted to Vinyl, also had some nice things to say about it.
I believe he sent me one of the songs from there, and I didn't hate it. I didn't. I mean, I wasn't a big Foreigner fan to begin with. So you know.
So who's left for a Foreigner tour with? I mean,
Survivor.
Because they're survivors.
And Journey.
No, they're headlining.
Journey's a little too big to touch Foreigner.
Yeah, they are now.
Yeah.
Because
hipster irony, Chicago hipster irony, Don't Stop Believing, the 2005 White Sox.
Right. You think?
And then followed by, yeah, I think that song that brought that song into the public consciousness again to a new generation.
The Sopranos.
And then the but the Sopranos.
And Glee.
And Glee, yes.
But the Sopranos picked up on it because of it became popular again in 2005 with the White Sox.
Really?
Yeah. The Sopranos was what? That was 2008.
Yeah, I just had no idea that that Don't Stop Believing had become popular again because of the White Sox.
Yeah, it was like their theme song.
Huh.
How much would you love to be Steve Perry, man?
I've been saying that every day for the past 25 years.
I mean, in what respect?
To just be able to sit at home and be like, nah, I'm not going to do anything.
And just be like, nah, I like that.
Steve, please get back together with us. Let's do a reunion tour. Steve.
A guy I know was sitting at was at the San Francisco airport, and he saw Perry sitting down on the floor, just working on his MacBook. He was just plugged into when you see people at the airport and they're plugged in, just sitting down because that's the only place where there's an open outlet. Mm-hmm. In this case, it was Steve Perry.
I can beat that story. I was on the Q train yesterday, and I sat down next to the singing Saw lady, the woman in the subway who plays the musical Saw.
And gee, shocking that there would be an open seat next to her.
Well, she wasn't playing it at the time, and of course I thought back to, you know, Jeff and I ripping apart the musical Saw at Christmas time for Melomas last year. And so the way my brain works is I'm sitting on the train or I'm just thinking, I got to somehow tell Jeff about this. How am I going to do this? So I just went over to her and I said, excuse me, can I take your picture? She wasn't playing. She was there. Her Saw was all wrapped up and she had a hat on that said Saw Lady and she had a t-shirt on that said Saw Lady. And
I think that the city makes her wear those.
Well, it may be... Maybe you mean so people just don't think she's randomly walking around with a saw.
So people know to keep their distance at all times.
Oh, I thought it was like, you know, so people just knew, you know, like like along with the people who are armed at Obama rallies, like she just shows up with a saw.
So the question is, was this more of an event for you than getting personally called by
by Wayne? Yes. That's very funny because this happened yesterday.
I wish I could have gotten that out.
Oh, yeah. Last night we were in the car with some friends and I started playing that phone call of Wing. Actually, this is a great place, actually. I'm really excited to do this, that I've been dreaming up a new series. I haven't even told Jeff about this yet. I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but you guys seriously let me know if you think this is a good idea. The series is going to be called Wing or Jason. Wait, let me finish. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to record clips of me singing along to karaoke tracks and clips of her. And you have to – it's a game. You have to guess which one is Wing and which one is me. Because I can do a mean Wing impression.
You can call yourself Beak.
So I'm sitting next to the Saw lady. And I'm like – I say to her, excuse me, can I take your picture? And she was so – happy. Like I said, this does not happen to you very often. She said, no, people take my picture all the time when I'm playing, but not while I'm just sitting on the subway. And I was like, well, you know, you're a New York celebrity, you know.
Then why do people always throw eggs at me?
But I gotta tell you, and I told Jeff this last night, he doesn't believe me, but I left the subway, got off at Union Square, both of us. She was setting up to perform there. I went and I had to go to the bookstore, and then I got back in the subway probably about 35 minutes later, and she had set up and playing. And it was actually kind of nice.
I refuse to believe that.
It's true.
You know, you should have a Wing or Singing Saw.
Wing or Singing Saw or Jason.
This broadcast is probably endorsed by 5-time Grammy Award winner Michael McDonald.
Okay, now we're going to close out with each of us recommending something that we've been listening to lately, something that's been on our mind, something else that's been on our mind. We don't have a segment, a name for this segment yet, but hopefully we'll have one by the next episode. First endorsement is with Jeff.
Fun. We ran a review at Popdose that was not written by me and so was not embarrassingly positive. I love this record. I don't think anybody else that I know loves it quite as much as I do. I don't think Jason was all that into it. But it's a group that kind of rose out of the ashes of an earlier band called The Format that I never listened to, so I can't comment on. But the record is called Aim and Ignite, and it's out on Network Records, and the band is called Fun. And
all lowercase with a period.
Exactly. Kind of obnoxious, I have to admit. But they sound a little like Jellyfish, a little like Queen. There's a, you know, all the power pop influences that I know and love. And I wrote it up for Bullseye.com, and it was the first time in 3.5 years of writing for the site that I ever gave a new record 5 stars. So there's your endorsement right there.
Rustic, my baby, hit the slow. Well, I spent the weekend setting traps in the road I should have been, calling out my eyelids. You'll never guess what baby did. We she got home. Oh, oh. Now, 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 leaves the birds singing to me. Oh, what they trying to say?
Robbie Foulkes is an alt-country singer-songwriter here in Chicago, and I'd been hearing about him for a really long time, and I had some tracks of his on some compilations, but I'd never really gotten into him until earlier this year. And if he's known at all, it's for like a one-off novelty song he did called Fountains of Wayne Hotline, which is this absolutely hysterical parody of why Fountains of Wayne are so great at making these, you know, perfect pop songs, as if there's like a hotline that you could call up and you get one of the members of the band telling you, oh, I don't know what to do with, I've got my intro. What do I do with the rest of the song? Yeah. And it's a really funny thing, but the rest of his stuff is great too. And he's not only, really, really wickedly funny, but he's also a fantastic guitar player and his band is amazing as well. And I, you know, just go back and get all of his stuff. As best as you can.
Well, I used to tell us stories from the Bible. His homespun wisdom I still recall. It was only as a man I came to find out he never knew much about anything at all. Couldn't read a book and keep his lips moving. Read two without looking at his hands. You know, laughter was vice and Jews were evil. I declare he was a steel-headed man.
What's your endorsement, Jason? Do you have one?
I was kind of torn as to what I was going to endorse today. I kind of want to endorse the Damwells, which both of you have endorsed previously. Both, Dave, you endorsed it on your podcast a while back. And Jeff, I'm sure you wrote a review on one of the 6 billion websites you write for. Did you?
I did.
I couldn't find it.
No, actually, you know what? I don't think I did.
I know you mentioned it in one of your letters to the editor.
Yeah, no, I was all set to do it, and one of the other guys scooped me on it at Bullseye, so I didn't write it up for them, and I never got around to doing it for Popdose.
Well, I'll briefly mention it here, and then I'll go on to my other endorsement, because it's funnier. But I will say basically that for the Damwell's last album, One Last Century, they offered it for free over at Pace Magazine. All you had to do in exchange was just give them your email address. And basically, the intention was just to get the music out there. And as a result of putting that album out there, I've now listened to it a million times and bought their other album, Bastard of the Beat. And I think they're fantastic. So I guess I'm doing two endorsements. My other endorsement is for a group called Tragedy. Tragedy is an all-metal tribute to the Bee Gees. And for no reason whatsoever, as far as I can tell, their album title is We Rock Sweet Balls and Can Do No Wrong. An all-metal tribute to the Bee Gees. And I don't know why. I heard of them because their management is a company called Rocks Off Entertainment. And they booked Acoustic 80s to play a gig at the Knitting Factory last year. And so as I was looking over their website, I noticed that there was this all-metal tribute to the Bee Gees. And I believe it might be the same guys that are in Hair Supply, the all-metal tribute to Air Supply.
Do they moonlight in Hazy Dixie?
I don't think they do. I think that's a separate outfit.
The Blue Guys tribute to AC/DC, for those of you who don't know.
I think it might just be Bee Gees and Air Supply. But this album's actually kind of fun. As you would imagine it to be. I mean, it's all like, you know, you'll hear in the sample and the part that Dave plays of Staying Alive, you know, it's all really tongue-in-cheek metal voices and instrumentation, but good harmonies and stuff like that. And I'll also say that, you know, it's not easy to understand what the Bee Gees are talking about, but I actually understand lyrics in Staying Alive that I hadn't understood before.
That's going to do it for this first episode of the Pop Dose podcast. We will have links to everything that we talked about today in the show notes over at popdose.com, the best fucking website on the internet. Not the best website for fucking, the best fucking website. And while you're there, check out everything else that we have to offer. There is a devoted RSS feed for the podcast so that you can subscribe and get each new episode as it appears. Also, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/popdose. We are still working out the kinks here, so let us know what you think. You can leave a comment in the show notes or contact me at podcast@popdose.com. We will also soon have the show available at iTunes, and once it is, we appreciate you leaving reviews there as well, because they will help increase the visibility of the show. And we will be back with another episode next month, and we're going to leave you today with something cool that Jeff is going to tell you about.
We're doing an interview with a group called Desktop, which consists of Keith Thompson from the Electric Six and Zach Kurd from the Pop Project. These are two Detroit guys. Actually, I don't even know if that's true. I know Zach Kurd is a Detroit guy. How about that? Anyway, it's a collaboration that was recorded over the internet completely, and they put out a free EP at desktopjams.org. You can get all three of the tracks completely for free, completely legitimately, which probably means that none of you are interested in having them. But we're doing an interview with Zach Kurd from Desktop, and I asked him if they'd be interested in providing us with an exclusive track, and much to my delight and surprise, he said yes. This is going to be up for download at the site, but we thought we'd give you an early peek at it. Actually, I'm not sure when this podcast is going to run, so it might be late. But anyway, they did a cover of a song by the Ghost Town DJs called My Boo, which always makes me think of Jason when I hear it. So I thought that we could that it would be a nice choice.
I love you too, handsome.
To play us off on our first podcast together.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And, you know, as Dave said, we're still kind of working out the kinks here. So if there are things that you liked or things that you didn't like, let us know, and then we will immediately jump down your throat for saying them.
Yeah, don't let us know about the things that you didn't like, because we don't
care. If there are things that you really didn't like, keep them to yourself. We don't care.
Right. Excellent, excellent. This has been a lot of fun.
Yep. Likewise.
All right. Have a good one, everybody.
Can you guys hear me playing with myself over on over on this end?
Is that what that is?
You'll hear it on my recording.
I thought it was a cat strangling.
You can feel free to edit that out, Dave.
Should we tag that one on at the end?
maybe not. Well, let's see if we get anything better.
Okay.